When I applied to university, it was a problem because I'd actually had myself registered as a dropout when I was 16 because I was tired of school board visits.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I went to university.
What is it that you do nowadays?
What do I do now? I'm part of a small theater company called Stranger Theater. I work as a director, and I'm part of that company, and I'm also the artistic director of a theater festival called the Cooking Fire Festival, which is a festival of new outdoor work that happens in city parks in Toronto. And then on the side, I also do a little bit of teaching with homeschooled kids, actually.
You were homeschooled, and at that time, must have been considered pretty radical.
It was lunatic fringe when I was a child. It's been really interesting to see it becoming, I won't say mainstream, but at least becoming more acceptable. And like, for instance, when I went to university and when I began the application process, I had to explain the entire concept to universities. And even in the time from when I began to when I graduated, it became a little bit more normal. Like, not that it was common, but at least they had a reference point.
Yes. What were some of your impressions growing up without school? Just wondering how...
I had pretty interesting parents, and I also lived... Like, Toronto didn't have an enormous homeschool population, but it definitely had some. It always had some. I think my experience was probably very different than somebody who's growing up in a more rural or small town setting.
Mm.
So I don't think I felt isolated. I felt it was trickier when I was high school age, because most of the people I knew who'd been homeschooling decided then to go to high school, and I really didn't want to go that route. So friends that I had were in school, and I mean, even though I had close friends, they were still experiencing the world very differently from me. As a teenager, I had one or two good friends who were still homeschooling, but really not many.
Did you feel pressure, though, to go to school?
Not particularly. I think that, I mean, my reasons for not going were partly maybe a little bit fear of the unknown, but also I think wanting to see it through. And then certainly when I applied to university, it was a problem because I'd actually had myself registered as a dropout when I was 16 because I was tired of school board visits.
Oh.
So I had no school records and I was registered as a dropout, and most universities I approached said, you will need to take a makeup year. And I said, no, I'm educated and I'm capable of starting university in a first year program. And it was quite an uphill slog of trying to get myself into university when I was 18.
You didn't feel like an oddball kind of
thing? I felt like an oddball, because I mean, I was an oddball, like deeply an oddball, but I think, except maybe occasionally, it didn't bother me that much. It bothered me probably when I was like 13 and 14, but from what I can gather, 13 and 14 is generally when people are miserable, so there's nothing unique about that. But other than that, I think it really didn't trouble me that much. I think that I went through periods where that was true, and I think that was... And then I also went through periods of being extremely, extremely focused on my peer group, you know, when I was a teenager. And now I feel like it's a really big mix. And at that, like a really big mix, where I have a lot of friends who are a great deal older and also friends who are a great deal younger, and then also a number of friends who obviously are my own age. I think growing up, I definitely had more contact, or at least, had more contact and also had very close relationships with adults, not just my parents, but also friends of my parents or people that they knew. And I think that was actually a gift, that one of the things that is strange about the school structure is that you're kept rigidly within your peer group. I mean, even within a year, that you will effectively not have contact with anyone who's 3 or 4 years younger or older than you are. I mean, you will, but you won't have much. So that was, I think, true and a good thing. And it certainly didn't mean that I was uncomfortable around people my own age, or that I didn't seek their friendship or wasn't able to have friendship. I think it just meant that there was a broader range for it. I mean, it also meant, of course, that I was at times lonesome, but I think ultimately it was still a really interesting. I think that it was funny that I found university difficult, because I'm also very, very social, but I think that I had moments in university where I felt like I was going a little bit nuts, because I was suddenly living in a context where you were social all the time, and even though I loved it, I really, really missed that kind of, that there was something very contemplative about being alone, that it was possible to lose. So I applied to a number of schools, and the only one I got a really, really positive response to was a small liberal arts college in Halifax. And I think because they were so small, they were genuinely interested in what I'd done rather than in my showing the hoops that I could jump through. It worked out, but it was a pretty interesting process.
As someone who didn't go to school, what were some of the opportunities that you just mentioned some of the things you'd done. What were some of those things that you had that kind of chance to do while not being at school?
Well, not being at school, I think a big one was, this is also part of living in a large city, but I feel like I became pretty independent about trying to discover the city at a younger age. Like, my reference point was not the school. So I kind of went on my bike and found things, and I did some theater things, because I was pretty clear since I was about 13 that that was my path. And also, I was able to work more, so I saved money. So when I was 18, I went and traveled around Europe by myself before going to university. And in general, I guess I also felt like I was able to develop a very specific kind of intellectual life, which doesn't mean that, sometimes it's a sacrifice of other things. Like my math, for instance, is really not up to scratch. but my reading always was. And as an adult, I actually started to feel that the really definitive difference was not being bored. That everybody I knew seemed to think of certainly sections of their childhood and definitely adolescence as a really, really long period of intense boredom. And that didn't have to be true for me. Not to say I was never bored, but that you could just pursue what your path was. There's a when I got to university and I started reading Plato, and there was this quote about that knowledge is only possible through love, through the love of a particular thing that you pursue. And I felt that it gave me the opportunity at a younger age to start to realize that you learn something because you love it, not because you're obligated to.
How did you feel? How did you cope in university? Just being there?
It was fine. I loved it. But again, it was a small school.
And the work, how was that for you?
I think I found it very exciting because you were being being graded was totally new, and so it was weird, but it was also like really exciting. I really, really enjoyed it, but it was also a school where, for instance, in the first year, very, very few of the people there were from the city. Like, a lot of people come to that school from outside. So everybody was in relatively the same boat. Most of them were away from home for the first time. And because of that, I didn't experience it as odd. And I had very, very interesting professors and just very small classes. I don't know how I would have felt if I'd been in a situation where all my classes had 200 people in them, because I was in a situation where my classes had 10 people, 10, 12. So in that way, it was really... And I think that it was exciting because I'd grown up largely without competition, and suddenly you're in a context where you become competitive. And it was really fun to be competitive in that way for 4 years, and I did quite well and had a really good time. And by the time I graduated, I was so ready to be out of school. And I don't know if that has to do with the homeschooling or not. Everyone I knew was ready, but I had such a feeling that this had been a really, really wonderful experience, but I didn't want to be in that context again.
I've got a word or two to say about the things that you do. Rectify all the things that you should. Do what you want to do, and go where you're going to. Think for yourself, 'cause I won't be there with you. Do what you want to do, and go where you're going to. Think for yourself, 'cause I won't be there with you.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
You were really unschooled, so you really didn't have the structure and all that kind of stuff.
No, I mean, there are so many different approaches to homeschooling, right? Like, And when I was growing up, obviously it was all over the map, the people I knew. It's been interesting now, actually, because I have contact with these younger homeschoolers and also with their parents. It's a neat scene, but it's way more structured. And sometimes I think it's really good, and sometimes I feel like it's too regimented, that you're not allowing the possibilities of actually getting out of the entire model. But who am I to say?
I understand that you had the great Ivan Illich as your friend and mentor. Maybe there was some influence in your work or your choice of work or just the way you're living.
Yeah, I think I was 10 when I met him. Maybe I was a little bit younger. And he was a very, very profound, profound influence on me as an adolescent. And then, and also when I got older, I mean, particularly in the last few years since his death, I felt the influence even more strongly looking back of someone who was not just, was a champion of trying to deinstitutionalize yourself, not from some kind of, not from a political extremism and not from political ideology exactly, but from this sense that not that schools or hospitals or doctors or what have you should be condemned outright, but that they're problematic is the only model through which you can live. And that I feel like that has been, that was his particular gift to the way that I've at least fumblingly trying to live my life, not of a sense of distancing yourself from institutions because they're inherently, because they can be absolutely scrapped, but just to try to demonstrate that it's possible to not live your life in that context. I mean, I feel like even more than when I was a child, which is funny, you know, even as homeschooling has become more mainstream, the idea that you can't live your life without experts, or expertise, or gaining expertise, or somehow being always in the context of an institution, whether it's the hospital or the school, is so profound. And having the contact with Ivan as a child and as an adolescent, and then when I went to Europe when I was 18 and traveled, I stayed mostly with friends of his, and then also in his house in Bremen, and that was very remarkable to see this. I mean, also as a North American, to have contact with this immense European intellectual life was just beautiful. So I think that he gave a very, as I got older and I started to theorize more about homeschooling rather than actually living it, because I'd stopped, I'd done a university degree, and then I'd graduated from university and was, you know, an adult like everyone else. But looking at his work made me see the point in a really interesting way.
I can just imagine the honor it must have been to have that person as a mentor. It must be amazing.
I think it was also really lovely to have met him as a child as well, because when you're that young, you're not really conscious of someone as that. You can become conscious of them as a, you know, as a mentor or as a great man.
Yeah.
After you're conscious of them as someone who's a presence in your life, and through his friendship with my parents and so forth. So
do you want to talk a little bit more about your work, The Stranger Theatre?
Oh, yeah. It's a small group, I guess, sort of a fluctuating group. There's somewhere between 5 and maybe 8 of us, depending on the time of year when you look at it. And we've been working for about 4 years now. I mean, we're funded through various arts councils and what have you, in a very sporadic way, and we all live fairly hand-to-mouth. But we do stuff from folk tales and things that are somewhat political, and lately things with puppets. The theater festival in Pittsburgh that we just got back from is a festival of puppetry.
Do you actually write the plays? Do you write
plays
yourself?
I do the writing, though it's a very collective process in rehearsal, so we might change it a lot. In fact, we often do change it a lot. And a lot of it is using text from other sources. Like, you start with a literary text, or you start with a folk tale, or you start with, I mean, the biggest show that we did in the last year was The Diggers, which is a show about the English diggers, the group in under Cromwell that were, I guess, just after the English Revolution or the English Civil War, that went and occupied the common land and farmed it as a protest against the treatment of the poor. So we've always worked with either a historical story or a short story or something. And then a script is developed from that, but we'll use some text from the original plus text from anything, everything, like poetry and Foucault and news reports and what have you, and my ad writing to that. It's not as experimental as it sounds.
But is it a social activism in a sense? Or
yes, I would like it. When we started, we wanted it very much to be political, and then we've shied away from that a little bit, where we're telling political stories in a roundabout way, like they're historical stories, or the mode of expression is very tongue-in-cheek, partly because of being pretty wary of a lot of political theater, because it's very heavy-handed and sometimes not very good. And now I think we're kind of moving into telling more political stories, but also just, like, the next thing that we're planning is a sort of video and puppets and performance, Alice the Looking Glass, which isn't exactly political unless you're really interested in children's literature, which I am. So I don't know if that's how that's political. But we've been pretty all over the map, which I think is good. And in some ways, 4 years is a really long time to have existed. In other ways, we're also very young, so we're just kind of finding our way. But that's one thing. And then the other big preoccupation is a theater festival called Cooking Fire, where we perform and then we bring in companies from other cities, and in the first year from the States, and in this next year we're actually hoping to bring a company from the Czech Republic. We also do workshops in other parks, and we're hoping to do more with kids, like theater workshops.
And you work with the homeschooled children. Is it also theater?
No. Originally I did a drama class for 3 years that was for homeschooled kids. There was a couple of kids who were in school or were in some kind of alternative school. And then it was really interesting. It was a ridiculous amount of work. And then I stopped doing that because it was extremely time consuming. And now I'm sort of doing occasional things where I'll like set up, like I teach a group, and this has been set up by the parents, not by me. Or I come in once a week, I and another woman, and we like have a 2-hour discussion about certain aspects of history. Like right now we're doing the Renaissance, which is really fun. Yeah, so I do things where I'll come in, and last year I also did a thing where I worked with one kid on creative writing and reading, like going through the history of the short story, and then writing, because he really is interested in writing. So that's been amazing, also to have this contact with these kids, even if it's only like once a week. And see how they're doing it now and how their parents are doing it. And some of the families are people that I know because I'm friends with the parents. And then other times it's people that I really don't know that have called me or who I've met through friends of friends. And it's a very, very wide range of why people are homeschooling and what their approach is and so forth.
I just have a last question about the importance of community in the unschooling life that you had. Having other people around, any people, you know.
I mean, obviously I was sometimes alone in the house.
That's true too, yeah.
But I think that's a tricky one because it changes, because I was doing it straight through from sort of age 5 to 18, and so the dynamic of that changed massively. I think that I always marveled at people who managed to homeschool their kids in extremely rural areas because I think it was a really good thing that I could go out and see the city. I certainly had periods where I was quite... I think I had periods where I was lonesome, and I think that might be inevitable and not a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also found, I guess when it was time to make friends, I made them quite easily.
Community activities, I'm thinking of your mom talking about how she felt there was the park, for instance, she got involved in parks.
Yes, well, she was also involved, when I was younger, she was also involved in getting together a homeschooler's gym. We would all come and meet on Thursdays, and people would bring food, and everyone would run around, and that was huge. Like, I think that would have made, without that, things would have been very problematic, but there was a group of women, particularly my mother and some other women, who really, really wanted to see that happen. So because of that, there was a really strong social group. It wasn't huge, but it was huge enough, like enough that you had your scene and you had a gang and you could go out and run around and get yourself lost and just be, like, we used to go on excursions and stuff a great deal. And it's interesting to see the difference that the homeschoolers I know now and that I have contact with now, who are really, really interesting people, the emphasis is different. That for us, the emphasis was on getting together, eating food, and having the kids run around, and you know, the mothers would all be able to sit around the table and ignore us for 4 or 5 hours and talk to each other. And it was very, very much on unsupervised play and on just having a community to get together. And that for the people I know now, the emphasis is still very much on community, but it's more like a classroom situation. Like, they'll be more likely to get together a group that will be studying something, where they'll bring in someone to, like, well, in this case, me, to teach them for 2 hours a week or something, rather than getting together at the gym. And it's not better or worse, it's just interesting to see that's the emphasis is different.
Do you have any parting words?
I think that the only thing that I really realized as an adult is that it's not, that homeschooling or unschooling can only work from a kind of constantly evolving, working knowledge of what is possible and good. I'm almost thinking of good with a capital G here.
Mm.
That those specific people and those specific parents and that specific place that I've, not as a political good, not as something that's doctrinaire, and that it's, but if it does work, then it's a remarkable way to be educated by osmosis in the possibility that you can live your life not fully, because it's very hard to do it fully, and I mean, you'd have to be very hard line in a way that I'm not, but that you can live your life partially out of the context of an institution. So that's my parting words.
Up in the hospital, changing my shape.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners. The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.